Listener supported. WNYC Studios.
New York City's 1.1 million public school kids started classes officially this week, but only about 90,000 of them went back to classrooms, the rest opting for in-person learning return next week. Given the challenges and the stakes facing so many, we're devoting all of today's show to education in the time of COVID. After weeks of delays and uncertainty, we start the school year knowing only one thing for sure. It's not going to be like any other year.
There is one community in the United States that is even in a position to have a conversation about in-person learning. That's us.
We need to keep in mind that it's a very large union, roughly 200,000 members. So we really need to understand how the average rank and file member feels about this.
Any repairs that aren't complete before the first day of full-time teaching and learning will not be used.
I think they understand that it's going to be weird, but I think that nobody is really going to know until they actually go there and see how they feel about it.
It's going to be a very different kind of school year.
Let's show how we say bye.
Bye.
That montage started with the voice of the city's schools chancellor, Richard Carranza, and ended with Mayor Bill de Blasio and some students. Joining us now to talk about how the city's public schools are faring so far are two of my intrepid colleagues, WNYC and Gothamist reporters Jessica Gould and Sophia Chang, who have been covering education. Jessica and Sophia, welcome to all of it.
Hey, Bridget.
Hi.
So there's been so much happening, and for listeners who maybe are not following it as closely, let's start by just bringing everyone up to speed on where we are right now and how we got here. Jessica, this week, some students are in classrooms, some are doing remote learning. Whatever the case is, we're starting a good 2 to 3 weeks later than originally planned. What happened?
Well, there have been two delays to the start of the school year, and I would say that the second one really caught me by surprise, even though we kind of, you know, heard the rumblings of it. It was stunning to have a second delay just as we were so close to what was going to be the opening of in-person schooling, and the mayor had been so insistent that it was coming until the day that he wasn't. And I think the reason that that switch happened is, I think there are two main reasons. One is safety concerns about school buildings, and the other is largely staffing. This hybrid model that the New York City Public Schools are using has a combination of in-person classes and remote classes, and there need to be teachers to fit with both of those cohorts. Mm-hmm. So there's the students coming in, and they're coming in part-time for social distancing. Then they're home sometimes. They need teachers when they're home. And then there's also the kids who are fully at home. And so in school, at home. And that created a staffing shortage that they're still trying to address right now.
Mm. Sophia, Mayor de Blasio has really taken a stand that in-person learning is essential for so many families. Last week, he actually said it would have been immoral if this city went all remote. But we're seeing the numbers for families who choose to go all remote tick up. It's now at 46%. Are you surprised by those numbers? And what do you think that tells us about how families are assessing readiness for in-person learning?
Yeah, so Bridget, I think the mayor even spoke about it himself this week, that he suspects a lot of parents are waiting to see how this all shakes out in the first couple of weeks. Nobody has tried to do anything like this on this scale in America. And he said that, you know, he understands that some parents are being cautious and want to see how this all will unfold before they decide that their students will return to school buildings themselves.
Jessica, the mayor has also said that he's expecting the number of families who are going to classes in person to increase. Are you getting a sense of that? Is that what you're hearing from families?
Well, so far, you know, it's been just the opposite, that people have been going more and more remote, both families keeping their kids home and teachers asking for accommodations. I hear those numbers are still increasing. That's what principals tell me. But I was in a school, a pre-K program on Monday, and you know, there were masks, but there were still kids playing with blocks and singing and dancing. And I think we all want this to work. We want it to be safe, but we're going to have to see, you know, whether these precautions that they've put in place are sufficient to keep cases contained when they inevitably emerge. And that's what I think a lot of people who are interested in going back to school are waiting to see.
Sure. Jessica, let's talk a little bit more about that trip you took to a pre-K classroom this week. For our listeners who don't know, of course, pre-K is for our city's four-year-olds, some of whom may be going to school for the very first time. You got some tape. Let's listen to a preschool teacher you spoke with. This is Pascal Jean Jacques, who told you how she was feeling.
It feels great. It's surreal. I'll admit that. It's something that I'm not used to, but we're going to have to get used to. We've gotten all our PPEs. They've separated the children 6 feet apart. As you can see, we have masks on. We have the daily health check. So I'm fine.
Jessica, I imagine that for four-year-olds wearing masks, you know, this is a challenge on top of the existing challenges that come with teaching in a preschool setting. What did you see, and have you been hearing any changes since that first day?
Yeah, I mean, it's hard to overstate what a big deal the first day of pre-K is, especially for students and parents who've never done school before. It would be a big deal even not in a pandemic. So, you know, when I was watching parents drop off their kids, there was the usual sort of clinging to their parents and having to be coaxed in by teachers. But that's different this year. In the past, parents have been able to go to the classroom and sort of deposit their kids there, pick them up there as well, and ease them in. That can't happen now. And so teachers were meeting parents and kids outside. There was this little boy, Ryan, who had a Batman mask on. And, you know, the teachers were complimenting him on the Batman mask, and they were really trying to ease him in. And then just to give you a glimpse of what it looked like inside one of the pre-Ks I went to, you know, all the students, first of all, there weren't very many. There were four or five in a class. Mm-hmm. And in the cases I saw, two teachers as well. And they were sitting at separate tables, and they were largely playing in their own centers by themselves. They had to wash hands over and over again. And obviously they were wearing masks. There were temperature checks for them and their families before they were brought in. And, you know, instead of the typical play, there were, you know, occasional dance breaks for them to get their energy out, but not touch each other. And that teacher, Pascal, that I talked to, you know, she was saying how hard it is not to be able to guide the kids physically, not to hug them. And she has to show her emotion for them and, you know, not with smiles and the expressions that she would typically use, but silly voices. So there are all these other challenges. That said, in a way, it also looked like a normal pre-K. You know, kids were playing with their blocks, they were playing house, and so it was kind of a cognitive dissonance in that way.
Yeah, a new normal, so to speak.
Yeah.
Sophia, you also did a story about what a child's typical day might look like now. What were some of the biggest differences for this upcoming year that you found?
Well, certainly, I think the way that a child will be interacting with the physical environment at school will be different. There's going to be a lot of hand washing. Hand sanitizer will be doled out at regular intervals. I talked to teachers and administrators who helped me understand how lunch was going to work. Little kids will be eating in their classrooms, and the Department of Education provides free lunches for all students. And I believe that this year they're not doing hot lunches because serving a hot meal would require more proximity. And so they're sticking with prepackaged sandwiches and wraps and salads and fresh fruit and milk. And then there's nap time still for pre-K kids because they're so young. And so one administrator said that nap time would be distanced. Each little kid would be on their mat, but they would be placed in alternating head to foot positions. So if you can imagine, will be sort of arranged in that way. And I think it's just a lot of extra space, extra precautions, a lot of hand washing rituals.
Sure. I think one of the periods that a lot of kids look forward to during a day is recess. You know, is that possible during this age of COVID? Or, you know, is that going to look more like the dance breaks that Jessica saw? How will kids get some of that energy out throughout a day?
I think it will depend on the school and their facilities and proximity to the parks and playgrounds. But I know that young children are allowed to take mask breaks if they ask their teachers to do so. So that will be something they're allowed to do. And then they, at least one school told me they're using hula hoops as a way to get active, but, you know, have a natural distance built in.
Well, that's great. I'm Bridget Bergen, filling in for Allison Stewart. You're listening to All of It, and I'm speaking with Jessica Gould and Sophia Chang, two of my colleagues from the WNYC and Gothamist newsroom, about this start of this new school year in this age of COVID. Jessica, we can't talk about this new school year without talking about remote learning, since that is a way that so many families have decided to start the school year. But we know it comes with challenges. Can you talk about some of the tech issues that both parents and students have been having with remote learning so far?
Yeah, so students started remotely for a few days last week with, you know, orientations, and then had their first full day of instruction on Monday. And what I'm hearing so far are a lot of challenges with passwords, and which, you know, passwords are hard for me to juggle a lot. And, you know, that's one thing that not all of the parents have been informed, or they don't speak English fluently, and so they weren't aware where to find their password. I think even for families who are very tech savvy, there are some changes that have been made to the system this year that's making it hard to get in initially. There's also, you know, the DOE distributed last year over 300,000 Wi-Fi enabled iPads. And that was a huge deal, in diminishing the digital divide. But not all of these iPads have been working when they try to connect to the internet. So I was talking to a teacher this week in Queens, and his students were, many of them and their families were kind of lined up outside of the school, even though the school wasn't open yet, elementary school, to get help connecting to the internet. I think a lot of these iPads that the DOE handed out sort of earlier don't have the connection in the same way that some of the more, once they figured things out, they handed out iPads that were able to connect more easily. And the problem is that the schools often aren't equipped with the information that the families need. And so they're just sending them to a helpline, and the helpline has been jammed. And so there are a lot of students who have been having trouble getting in, and that's students who have devices. There are also students who don't have devices yet. And a new wrinkle is that principals have been put in charge of collecting and redistributing these iPads that, you know, from students who don't need them, who are graduating or whatever. And that whole process is very challenging, and some of the iPads are broken. So it's just, it's a massive undertaking to get all these students online.
And yet, you know, that statistic that we talked about at the top, nearly 46% of families are still choosing remote over in-person learning. Just, what are some of the issues that you're hearing from families that they have to consider when they're making that decision?
Yeah, so a lot of families have been telling me all summer that they just don't feel safe. And I heard this most from communities geographically and racially that were hardest hit by COVID. And this research has sort of borne it out that Black and Latinx families and families in some of the more hard hit areas are more likely to be going remote. I talked to students who've been weighing their own health issues. You know, I talked to a senior who has serious asthma, but she also really struggled with technology. So she is planning to go in person, even though she's, you know, it's a risk. And then I talked to another student who has a mom who's severely diabetic, and he had a really hard time with remote learning last spring, but it just didn't work for him educationally, you know, academically. He wasn't, he's a really strong student, and it just wasn't communicating with him in the way that in-person teaching does. But he decided to continue remote because he's concerned about his mom.
Sophia, when I hear that, it just makes me think of all of the issues that parents, teachers, administrators are struggling with. And one of the challenges has been an issue around the trust and transparency and faith people have in the leadership of the city and the school system, in Mayor de Blasio and Chancellor Carranza. I'm wondering, what are you hearing from teachers, and do you have a sense that they trust the mayor?
I hear a lot of distrust in the mayor and the school's chancellor from the teachers I speak to. One of them told me this week that he feels constantly gaslit by what the mayor is saying every day because it doesn't meet reality as teachers are trying to plan and, you know, work around the new challenges. I think the reality, like Jessica had mentioned, that is that cases will come up. And how the DOE will respond to the cases is where the trust really needs to happen. And teachers so far seem very skeptical that they can really count on the city to take care of them. Remember in March when the pandemic started spreading in New York City, there was a lot of disorganization and confusion in schools as cases popped up in communities. And so I think a lot of teachers are very wary of how the DOE and the city handled it back then.
I'm wondering for you both, how are you going to gauge how well in-person learning is going? You know, is it just about how many kids are actually going back into classrooms? Obviously, we're going to see so many more kids going back next week. Or is it also about how schools react when inevitably there are positive cases? Jess, if you want to start there.
Sure. I mean, I think that's exactly right. I think that in-person learning, the mayor has said this repeatedly, and I do think it's true. It generally, not always, but generally works better for kids. They learn better. Teachers teach better. They get their energy from their classes. So figuring out what works academically in in-person learning isn't the challenge. The challenge is figuring out whether we can keep the cases down. I think the bigger challenge about what's, you know, working academically is what we can do with remote learning to actually make it good. And there's been a lot of criticism that not nearly enough energy was put into improving that experience and training teachers over the summer.
Sophia, what are your thoughts?
You know, Bridget, I'm just thinking that it's a good point that the city officials so often speak about the logistics and, you know, sort of the hopes that they have for pulling off reopening. But I can't recall them actually speaking about what they hope to accomplish at the end of all this, aside from bringing some sense of structure and normalcy to the 1.1 million public school kids in New York City. And maybe that's all we can hope for right now.
We're going to wrap soon, but I'm really curious. You know, the school year has just begun, and you two have been doing incredible work. Thank you so much. What are some of the things you're reporting on going forward? Sophia, do you want to start?
Yeah, so we would love to hear from parents, teachers, educators, students, also, you know, other stakeholders who are by, you know, what's going on with the school's plan. I'm also curious about how the mask policy is so new, and it seems like a potential area where, unfortunately, maybe yet more overzealous disciplining can happen. So I would really like to hear from parents and other educators on how they're going to approach that, and also from kids, like, how do you feel about this in school?
And I would say that for me, I'm desperate to find out what this is going to look like inside schools. In person, you know, I got a glimpse of pre-K, but we open up to elementary, middle, and high school students next week. I've heard that because of these staffing challenges, there are going to be cases where kids are on their iPads in school, you know, still doing remote learning with a teacher who's at home. The DOE says that that's going to be rare, but it's still going to happen. So how are they going to make this work? What are the logistics going to be like? And then I'm really interested in, you know, how people's experience with remote learning is. I'm hoping that the story won't be for much longer. Can they get on? Do they have the devices? But then what does it look like? What are they learning? This is a whole new world, and we're, you know, only a few months into experiencing it. I would love to hear, you know, the good and the bad about that.
That's great. Well, I want to thank you both again. I've been speaking with WNYC and Gothamist reporters Jessica Gould and Sophia Chang. Thanks for joining us on All of It.
Thanks.
Thank you, Bridget.
Since WNYC's first broadcast in 1924, we've been dedicated to creating the kind of content we know the world needs. Since then, New York Public Radio's rigorous journalism has gone on to win a Peabody Award and a DuPont Columbia Award, among others. In addition to this award-winning reporting, your sponsorship also supports inspiring storytelling and extraordinary music that is free and accessible to all. To get in touch and find out more, visit sponsorship.wnyc.org.